When you were two, you had learned to speak and walk. When I was two, I was made an officer, a lieutenant, to replace the one whose body had been bisected in front of me. Dorsal and ventral, peeling away from each other and falling sideways. The last thought he sent, one of surprise, at feeling a cool breeze between his front and back. And I, stumbling back with wounds of my own, holding my arm across my abdomen to keep my insides in, at an age when you were pulling the heads off your sister's dolls. When you were four, you learned to read and tie your shoes. When I was four, I attempted to negotiate a surrender, to keep my soldiers from having to risk their lives by having to take a settlement, one hut at a time. There was no surrender, and we went through the settlement, killing as we went, and dying too. Needless deaths all around, needless save to honor the death wish of the settlement leader, who preferred annihilation to life. I made sure I found him, denied him the martyrdom he imagined for himself, made him bury his dead, and gave him a cell to live a life which I hoped would be long enough to sprout regret. When you were six, you sat in school and learned to add two and three. When I was six, I found you, or what remained of you. So much of you strewed behind you, along with the wreckage of your ship and your crew, and what was left of you alive only through luck and will and technology. You should have been dead when we met, and you should have died after we met, in the long minutes between finding you and saving you. I remember touching your face and lying to you that you were all right now, seeing you weep and wondering if it might not be more merciful to let you die. But I had my orders to bring you back, so I did, knowing what it would mean for your life, but not knowing what it would mean for mine. I was six when I met the person I would love and became the person you would love again, the person I was made from, whom you met, or so you told me, when you were six. Please understand me. I do not mean to belittle you when I note that I was leading soldiers at an age when you could barely control your bladder, or that I stood dazzled by three moons rising over a phosphorescent sea, lacking the poetry to match in my head, the song in my eyes, at an age where you enjoyed the taste of paste and boogers and small coins. You no more chose how to be born than I did, and your life is no more or less complete because you required 2 decades to become an adult, and several decades after that to become a soldier, both of which I was from the moment I opened my eyes. I do not mean to demean you when I admit I find some amusement at the idea of you as a child, of you reaching no higher than my waist, of you big-eyed and your big head wobbly on your neck, looking at the world with curiosity if not comprehension, needing to wait years to know enough to know how little you know. I note these differences because they stand between us. When you speak of growing up and growing old, you speak to someone who did not do the first and can choose not to fear the second. Every day of my life, from first to this, in a body that defies both growth and decay, even if one day it cannot defy death. It is not eternal, but it doesn't change. And if I chose, I could stay in it for as long as I could manage. Timeless in my way, unyielding to both creation and destruction, and because of this, separate from the human stream of age, the arc that bends from development to deconstruction, that gives definition to your days, provides sense of story and an assurance of all things in their season, and all of it coming to an end as natural and complete as its beginning. I hear you speak of your childhood as the blind hear someone speak of the color of a flower or of a beloved's eyes. Understanding that the color exists, understanding the emotion color can arouse, but lacking the experience that brings understanding into empathy. Understanding a thing without feeling it deep in the brain, where the joy of it will shudder out, down the nerves to one's very fingertips. Childhood is a country undiscoverable to me, something so far removed from me that I cannot even say that it was denied, because it was never something that I was meant to have. Nor is it something I desire, whose absence I resent. I am who I am, and that is enough. It is simply that childhood is an experience we do not share, another place where our lives refuse to link, a commonality we do not have. When I think of you as a child, it amuses me, and it makes me sad that you do not get to think of me the same way. I am 9 years old. In those 9 years, I have seen things that others could spend lifetimes and never once see. I have traveled farther than entire millennia of explorers, their journeys laid end to end and back again. I have been on more worlds than we knew could possibly exist, for all but the smallest slice of time our species stared up at the stars. I have measured a life, not in teaspoons, or tablespoons, or ladles, or jugs, but in inexhaustible gouts of experience, pushing me forward into wonder and terror and being. I am 9 years old, and I have lived in every moment of that life. No time wasted in idleness and futility, in routine and repetition, in grinding gears or marking time. You can't tell me I have lived less than those who have merely lived longer. It does not matter. All these experiences and all this experience make no difference in how I am seen, how all of us are seen, those of us whose lives who begin in medias res. I am 9 years old and must be what they remember 9-year-olds to be, seen, at best, as an idiot savant, a useful moron, a little girl in a big girl's body. Those who don't belittle me fear me and mine. Grown too fast, made too smart, too far out of their own experience to understand, assume to be without morals because they would not have been moral at the same age. We are sent to do the things they judge necessary and yet fear to do. Fine for us to be given tasks that might cost us our souls when we're assumed not to have souls at all. We learn quickly not to hold this fear and stupidity against most of the human race, because the alternative is to let you all die. When I first decided to love you, I needed to know how you would see me. Whether you, like so many others, would see a child in an oversized body, or someone who was your equal, in everything but time. I waited for the moment of condescension, for the casual dismissal, for the instance when you would ask what I could possibly know, given how little time I could have known it in. I am waiting still, but I no longer expect its arrival. You are not blind to my age or our differences. You know better than anyone how brief my existence has been, because my life could have only begun after her life ended. Perhaps you see me as a continuation of a life interrupted, or perhaps you simply don't care and see me as your equal because there's no reason not to. I have time to find out as our lives continue, and we mark time not by what has come before, but by what we have together. Chapter 6. Sex. I must apologize to you. I am sitting with you and you are talking to me, telling me about the world to which we are going, where you and I will start our lives together. I'm sure what you're saying is important. Critical things I need to know about a place I have never been, but where I will spend the rest of my days. I am sure you are telling me things I need to hear. But I must confess, I'm not hearing a single word. Instead, I am intent on your face, and the movement of your lips, and the memory of how those lips feel when they are on me. While you speak, I am thinking of the last time we kissed, and the subtle friction that took place because we were so slightly out of sync. The rush of blood flooding our lips to make them softer and make us more aware of just how many nerve endings each of us were pressing against the other.